You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Let's talk about Stalker Online. This is an MMO, a massively multiplayer online game with over 1.3 million subscribers. Apparently, usernames, passwords, email addresses, phone numbers, and IP addresses were leaked online, and the firm explained that the passwords were only stored or hashed in what's known as MD5, which is, quite frankly, one of the most least secure encryption algorithms around. Now, the two databases were found on underground sites as part of a dark web monitoring project, and they found two databases, one containing about 1.2 million records and another one containing 136,000 records. It would appear if the attacker compromised the Stalker Online web server before stealing the user data. And so heads up to you if you play that game. Moving on, let's talk about Preen.me. This is actually a social media marketing firm that caters to influencers, and personal data of an estimated 100,000 social media influencers has been accessed and partially leaked. Now, this same breach has also led to more than 250,000 social media users having their information fully exposed on a dark web hacking forum. And this includes influencers' social media links, email addresses, names, phone numbers, and home addresses. And basically, this also appears to be more focused on influencers in the cosmetic or lifestyle-related industry. So if you're following influencers or are an influencer for cosmetic or lifestyle content, heads up to you, you might have been hit if you use Preen.me. Moving on, let's talk about messaging app Telegram. They bill themselves out as a hyper-secure and private messaging platform. They said they had a data breach that exposed a database containing the personal information of millions of their users. This database, which was exposed on a dark web forum, included users' phone numbers, unique Telegram user IDs, and other items, according to this report. Telegram, though, reportedly said that much of this leaked data ended up being outdated when their researchers went and looked, with 84% of it being collected before mid-2019, and around 60% of it was inaccurate. So if you're one of the 40% of Telegram users, millions of Telegram users that uses this, you might be in trouble for using Telegram because they got you hit. The other 60%, you're apparently fine. Moving on. Let's talk about one of the last few ones we're going to be talking about, because these are the breaches we're going to be I'm probably going to be reporting on for quite some time. Now, the first one is one called Blue Kai. This is a company owned by Oracle, and it has amassed one of the largest banks of web trafficking data outside of the federal government. So, for example, if you've ever wondered why your ads are so incredibly accurate, it's because companies like this are deeply tracking everywhere you go online. And you know where I'm going with this. Because Blue Kai basically got hit. Now, they are looking at this from this manner. So Blue Kai uses website cookies and other tracking tech to follow you. And so by knowing which websites you're visiting and which emails you're going to open, or you're opening rather, marketers can then use this information to then start really focusing on you and understanding what your estimated income level is, education level, political views, and interests in order to target with these ads. But for a time, And this is the problem. The web tracking data was leaking onto the internet because they left a server unsecured without a password, which was exposing billions of records for anyone to find. And so if I had access, or I knew this was out there as attackers did, I could have copied out this database. And if I wanted to go after you, I could understand or sort you by, okay, show me people with very high incomes that have these political views that are in this demographic or this geographical location and on, and basically create sculpted and targeted attacks against these people. I think that is going to be a huge, huge problem. The next major one that we're going to talk about, and there are three, so this is two out of three, is I'm going to give you an update on Vault 7. Now, if you recall, basically Vault 7 CIA hacking tools, which is what this was, were dumped onto WikiLeaks in 2016, which was just a bombshell of understanding of just how easily the CIA could break into some of the kinds of infrastructure as well as surveil it. We now have more information on how that happened thanks to an internal report prepared for then director Mike Pompeo, as well as his deputy Gina Haspel, who now runs, or rather is the director of the CIA. This was apparently the result of a workplace culture in which the agency's elite computer hackers, and I quote, quote, prioritize building cyber weapons at the expense of securing their own systems. Now, security procedures were woefully lax, according to the report, within the special unit that designed and built these tools. And what's most terrifying about this is that without the WikiLeaks disclosure, according to this report, the CIA might have never known the tools had been stolen. And I quote, had the data been stolen for the benefit of a state adversary and not published, we might still be unaware of the loss. This is according to the Senate task force. So this is a problem that I see with tech outfits constantly. A chunk of my own client base, if I'm talking about this, are actually MSPs or managed service providers, and they are coming to me to look to learn about more advanced cybersecurity frameworks and hardware and software and all of that, as well as training. And I see regularly in their own internal practices that cybersecurity is oftentimes an afterthought. When you're so focused on delivering, to your clients or your customers that you don't take time to enhance your own internal defenses, it's a serious issue, especially when we are talking about a CIA that is developing these cyber offensive weaponry. And who's to say that prior to this being dumped on WikiLeaks, the Russians or the Chinese or somebody else didn't actually have these tools well before WikiLeaks got them. And so if you are catering, let's say, as a business to other businesses, bigger businesses, it really behooves you to make sure your internal controls for cybersecurity are there, because quite frankly, you can get somebody else hacked, and that's a very serious issue. And finally, we need to talk about the biggest thing that is in the news in terms of data breaches that is going to be a bomb dropping for absolutely everybody. And here we go, because hundreds of thousands of potentially sensitive files from police departments across the United States were leaked online last week. Now, this collection is being dubbed Blue Leaks and was made searchable online, and it stems from a security breach at a Texas web design and hosting company that maintains a number of state law enforcement sharing portals. Now, this collection, which is nearly 270 gigabytes in total, is the latest release from a group calling themselves Distributed Denial of Secrets, or DDO Secrets, which is an alternative to WikiLeaks that publishes caches of basically previously secret data. So in a post on Twitter, DDO Secrets said that the Blue Leaks archive indexes, and I quote, 10 years of data from over 200 police departments, fusion centers, and other law enforcement training and support resources, and that, and I quote again, among the hundreds of thousands of documents are police and FBI reports, bulletins, guides, and more. Additionally, the data dump contains emails and associated attachments. And to quote them again, because they keep going, our initial analysis revealed that some of these files contain highly sensitive information, such as ACH routing numbers, internal bank account numbers, and other financial data, as well as personally identifiable information and images of suspects listed in requests for information and other law enforcement and government agency reports. This is a massive, massive problem, because this is going to affect law enforcement, local, state, and federal, nationwide, I think, for months to come. Now, by virtue of Blue Leaks, we have now seen our first round of disclosures by law enforcement, the first one being the Maine Information and Analysis Center, or MIAC, which is a unit of the Maine State Police. Now, they were already apparently under intense scrutiny after allegations of surveillance abuses and documents, leaked documents from the MIAC that have been published online include personal information about subjects of police investigations across the state and reveal details of the center's operational practices, which apparently includes monitoring Black Lives Matter protests and activists. And so that is obviously a very, very serious issue. Maine's Department of Public Safety did not respond to a request to comment on this breach and have not yet. And the second one that was reported on the heels of Blue Leaks was the Redmond Police Department in the state of Washington. And basically for the same reasons above that I just mentioned. So I don't have to detail what happened, but Redmond got hit in the same way. And we're going to see more and more and more of this. And wow, was it a crazy breaches of the week for the last couple of weeks? And those were the highlights. I skipped a ton, but every week I do a breaches of the week video and podcast, and it is getting longer and longer out there. So were you affected? I'm going to say yes, you were, just because it's been absolutely nuts. So please make sure you're staying safe out there.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is going to be on Russia, because I'm going to talk about a 6-year misinformation campaign that they ran that you've never heard about that just came to light. And I think this is very important, and it really underscores, what we need to discuss about cybersecurity and technology, especially in the backdrop of another national presidential election this year in 2020. And so this is coming from various sources, but I'm cribbing primarily some of my notes from The Verge. And let's just dive into this, because, man, it is crazy. So for 6 years, a mysterious group has used forged documents and a network of burner accounts to spread misinformation promoting Russian national interests. And this is according to a new report from an outfit called Graphica. Now, they dubbed this secondary infection, and the campaign used basically a whole bunch of different tactics. It spanned a number of online platforms, beginning on the Russia-based LiveJournal in 2014. And I actually did not realize that LiveJournal was based out of Russia. They also moved to Twitter and YouTube later that year. And in the years that followed, the campaign shifted to Reddit, Medium, and even the user-generated portion of BuzzFeed. Now, the report says that they spanned more than 2,500 pieces of content posted across 7 languages and in more than 300 different forums, websites, and social networks. According to researchers, the content tended to promote themes that aligned with Russian national interest during this 6-year period. So this included the unreliability of Ukraine, which obviously they invaded in 2013, 2014 or so, and took Crimea from Ukraine. This also included hostility to NATO interventions about that. And it also had personal attacks on critics of the Kremlin or the Russian government itself. They even went after the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, which instituted a 4-year ban on Russian involvement in international sports like the Olympics after finding evidence that they were doctoring lab results for things like steroid use from their athletes to give, obviously, their athletes a competitive edge. But here's the interesting thing with everything that they did over these thousands of content pieces posted over hundreds of social media platforms. This appears to be a failed experiment by the Russians, because despite the broad scope and long duration of the campaign, few of the posts reached a broad audience, suggesting that the groups coordinating this effort may have not actually succeeded in their goals here. And so the report concludes, and I quote, "If secondary infection was aiming at viral impact, it failed. In many instances, users, for example, appear to have dismissed the troll post as untrustworthy, basically tipped off by poor grammar or idiosyncratic political agendas." And the report says, repeatedly in the course of this research, Graphica came across comments below secondary infection stories that questioned them or ridiculed them or called them out as Russian trolls. It is therefore especially important to maintain a sense of perspective when crafting responses to such online operations. In other words, these posts were done so badly that people are like, oh my God, this is clearly fake, it's a troll, whatever this is. And so it would appear that the Russians obviously have learned from this attempt and have honed their message, because we do know, for example, that the Internet Research Agency, which is their cutout misinformation troll farm, upped their American English dialect game and became more effective at crafting messages and also leveraging social media and Facebook advertising in particular to reach their intended audience. We saw that all throughout the 2016 election. I have literally done deep dives on this. I've written articles on this for Forbes and Smirconish of CNN. This is a thing that is demonstrably provable, and we actually have a lot of information, including the actual and aggregate of the actual posts that they've done. And so, like any good product for the Russians, for lack of a better term, it has to evolve and it has to be honed into something effective. And the Russian intelligence agencies are definitely taking that to heart. And it's not just here in the United States. Because if you think about this, Russia has been practicing on us, you know, and they've been improving this. And apparently they have various outfits because secondary infection is not the same as the Internet Research Agency. And so they have been applying this, but they have been trying to take down virtually all of the NATO allies, you know, and it's not just since Ukraine, but it's going back. They have been running disinformation campaigns through the FSB for forever. And in, I want to say it was 2018 or early 2019, I wrote an article for Forbes about how the Russians were basically hitting and hacking everybody. And so if you look at this, in 2015, Russian hackers hit Germany's parliament and stole 16 gigabytes of sensitive email data, I believe including Angela Merkel. Now, researchers traced that penetration, their techniques, and the source of the attacks to Russian-sponsored cutout hackers. Russia also funded the far-right AfD party, or Alternative for Germany political party, that gained seats and traction in the German government in the the last major election they had since 2015, which obviously was a deep political shift. The Russians are trying to drive a wedge by having a far right, those obviously tied, or some believe in Germany, tied, let's say, with Nazism in some way, shape, or form, to gain seats and traction in the German government. But Germany is not alone, as is the United States, obviously. France. In France, Russia was caught funding Marine Le Pen's National Front Party. If you recall, she lost that election, but it was very, very close. Le Pen had taken large loans from Kremlin-backed oligarchs and actually spoke favorably of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Now, the current president, Emmanuel Macron, during basically this election against Le Pen, where he won, had said his campaign email servers were actually hacked by Russia, and sensitive emails and data was published on WikiLeaks. Very similar to what we saw here in the United States, with the DNC and the DCCC getting hit, and it was called the John Podesta email dump on WikiLeaks, where John Podesta, you know, obviously a Democrat and very much inside the previous administration, he had emails going everywhere, including to Hillary Clinton, you know, President Obama, and, you know, other people, obviously, you know, in and outside of the government. And so France is, again, they're seeing what we were seeing in 2016, but it's not just Germany, France, and us, it's also Italy. In Italy, the Russians funded a populist party called the Five Star Movement, and the Five Star Movement has gained momentum in Italy while calling for closer ties to Russia. And so as the Five Star Movement tends to increase, they're actually getting funded by Russian oligarchs and Russian cutouts by this, and that is not that publicly known, although it has been coming to light in the last couple of years. If you look at Greece, that's had a lot of financial trouble, there have been detailed investigations and records showing that the Syriza party in Greece has changed their foreign policy stance on Russia to be very favorable to Russia when they previously weren't. Kremlin-tied oligarchs have actually been buying large stakes in Greek media and energy corporations, and that is essentially a de facto bailout of Greece's economy. And so the Syriza party became favorable, even though they deny that they changed their stance, but their actions and their money trail are clearly saying otherwise. And so if Russia, for example, controls media in a country, then it can easily swing a population towards a more favorable view of Russia and Vladimir Putin. That, I think, is a very serious issue. Russia obviously has their own flagship media brand in RT, which is around the world. There's obviously RT USA. I believe there's an RT in Europe as well. RT is obviously Russia Times and all of that. And a lot of people say that, you know, because they're getting funding from the Russian government, they are also possibly part of this, you know, propaganda campaign to drive a wedge. But again, we're not just talking about Italy, France, Russia, Italy, France, Germany, us in Greece. We can look at the United Kingdom as well, because Russia apparently supported the United Kingdom Independence Party, or UKIP, or UKIP. UKIP heavily supported Brexit, which obviously went through. And it seems like, from what I understand, currently in the United Kingdom, there are many of the population that want to revote on Brexit to undo it, to come back into the EU and all of that. British intelligence confirmed that the Russians also tried to hack into the UK government servers, which prompted Prime Minister at the time, Theresa May, to publicly call out Vladimir Putin on for this event. Prime Minister Johnson, the current Prime Minister, I do not necessarily know his stance on Russia, but I've not heard of anything where he is, like President Trump here, for example, calling for closer ties to Russia, even though we've had some new information lately that I will get to. And then the next one we have to talk about, because it's not just the UK and France and Germany and Russia and Italy and us, we also have to talk about Spain, because Spain isn't immune to this either, and the Podemos party has openly received Russian backing and support. The Spanish government believes that Russian hackers were also heavily involved in the Catalonia independence movement, which has been very destabilizing for Spain in the last couple of years. If you recall, if you listen or watch international news, basically Catalonia in Spain essentially tried to break away in the same way the Basques have been doing for quite some time, with demonstrations, with basically a vote of no confidence in the Spanish government itself and all of that. And I believe that has all settled down. But the belief is that Russian hackers were basically pumping out on social media a lot of demonstrably false information and really spearing forward the Catalonia independence movement, which obviously would break Spain up if Catalonia were to leave, because it is one of the, I believe it is one of the most populous and wealthy states or sections of Spain itself. And again, we're not done, because now we can talk about Finland. And I've mentioned Finland before as well, because I think they're just a wonderful example of this, because in Finland, Russia launched a disinformation campaign prior to the 2015 election there in an attempt to sway the electorate towards candidates and parties that obviously favored Russian interests. And since Russia is right on the border of Finland, that is obviously in the Finns' best interest to make sure that they are keeping that separation from Russia. And many foreign policy analysts have made comparisons between the 2015 Finland election and the 2016 election in terms of tactics and techniques. The difference being is that the Finns went on a massive nationwide education initiative to basically teach their electorate how to spot disinformation and misinformation, whereas here in the United States, it appears to have been taken hold. And we can even see that today, even outside of Russian influence. So the 5G causes coronavirus cell tower burning thing, which is demonstrably false, is being proliferated online. And a lot of people are starting to believe this demonstrably false information on this. And so here we have this exact same thing in Finland, except people here just weren't simply trained to discern, to be critical, of sources and just double check facts. I put a lot of research into my deep dives, into my writing and all of that. And I am fortunate enough, especially on the writing side, to have an army of editors that will call me out to say, wait a second, this source isn't good. Double check this fact and all of that. So by the time I am publishing something, it has gone through a vetting process to ensure that I am not putting out there that is something that is hyperbolic or just demonstrative. False. And again, we have so many more examples of this. And the last example I will give you is plucky little Montenegro, because they have also been under the scope of Russia as well, because they have they were in the news around 2018 because President Trump suggested that helping them could possibly cause World War III. And they had their government servers hacked and witnessed Russia actually supporting a separatist political movement that ended up launching a coup in 2016 in an attempt to prevent Montenegro from joining NATO, which is an organization that Russia obviously has a very serious problem with, because it's in direct opposition to Russia. And President Trump here in the United States has harshly criticized NATO, which brings him more in line with Russia on NATO, even though we are one of the founding and sustaining members of NATO and that defensive pact. And so are we starting to see a pattern here? I mean, this list here is by no means complete of all of these different countries, but it's example after example of Russia's influence through financial help, political support, and cyber attacks aimed at disruption and disinformation in multiple countries, and it has been honing this. I started with a failed campaign that they invested a lot of time and energy and money that was easily spottable. Well, the stuff in 2016 wasn't, and they continue to hone this. And now we have other issues that we are talking about. Recently in the news, we learned, thanks to the New York Times, they broke a story that Russia had actually been paying bounties to the Taliban in Afghanistan for basically killing U.S. servicemen and women. And this is something that we really have not addressed at any real level in the government. The White House has not really said anything about this beyond saying, well, the president really didn't seem to know. They also tried to change the narrative to say, we know of no Russians killing, U.S. service men and women in Afghanistan, which was not the story. It was them paying bounty to the Taliban to do it. You know, so what does this look like? We are coming up to an election, you know, in just a few short months here, where we are going to have some very serious problems with misinformation, with fake news, with demonstrably false advertising, and we are seeing the Facebooks of the world do almost nothing to curtail this. Facebook, as I you know, mentioned, I believe in the news segment on this show, or maybe it was the last one, is now starting to do a little bit of fact checking and all of that, but it is a very serious problem because we can proliferate so much fake information, you know, even just outside of Russia. Again, look at the 5G thing, but if Russia is coordinating this and putting this out there and they're doing it in English that isn't broken or looks so obvious to be pro-Russian propaganda, all they're trying to do is destabilize a country. We have a very serious issue, and we need to really get our education up there. We really need to start looking at how we train a population to look at a situation like this and say, yes, we need to step back. We need to check these sources. That Rock, Flag, and Eagle, Illuminati, you know, newslibertynow.ru is not a good source, you know, of information. How are we checking up on, let's say, legitimate journalists to verify that they are doing their job? They go through a very stringent vetting process. I know, because I go through something very similar to a journalist, and I do not consider myself a journalist. I am an opinion writer that is basing my opinions on demonstrably true facts as I link to legitimate and reputable sources from journalists or scientific studies or other things. But the point is that anybody can spin up a website, a Facebook group, a free blog, and put out anything they want and make it look official. And if we have a problem with confirmation bias, and we do, then somebody that sees that and says, this fits my worldview because, you know, I love or hate the current administration and this speaks to that value of mine, we have a problem.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It's a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.